Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlanka again with another episode from A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. An ego that wants something from another, and what ego doesn't, will usually play some kind of role to get its needs met, be they material gain, a sense of power, superiority, or specialness. Or some kind of gratification, be it physical or psychological. Usually people are completely unaware of the roles they play. They are those roles. Some roles are subtle. Others are blatantly obvious, except to the person playing it. Some roles are designed simply to get attention from others. The ego thrives on others' attention, which is, after all, a form of psychic energy. The ego doesn't know that the source of all energy is within you, so it seeks it outside. It is not the formless attention, which is presence, that the ego seeks, but attention in some form, such as recognition, praise, admiration, or just to be noticed in some way, to have its very existence acknowledged. Now, a shy person who is afraid of the attention of others is not free of ego, but has an ambivalent ego that both wants and fears attention from others. The fear that the attention may take the form of disapproval or criticism, that is to say, something that diminishes the sense of self rather than enhances it. So the shy person's fear of attention is greater than his or her need of attention. Shyness often goes with the self-concept that is predominantly negative, the belief of being inadequate. Any conceptual sense of self, seeing myself as this or that, is ego. Whether predominantly positive, I am the greatest, or negative, I am no good. Behind every positive self-concept is the hidden fear of not being good enough. Behind every negative self-concept is the hidden desire of being the greatest or better than all others. Behind the confident ego's feeling of and continuing need for superiority is the unconscious fear of inferiority. Conversely, the shy, inadequate ego that feels inferior has a strong, hidden desire for superiority. Many people fluctuate between feelings of inferiority and superiority, depending on situations or the people they come into contact with. All you need to know and observe in yourself is this. Whenever you feel superior or inferior to anyone, that's the ego in you. Some egos, if they cannot get praise or admiration, will settle for other forms of attention and play roles to elicit them. If they cannot get positive attention, they seek negative attention instead. For example, by provoking a negative reaction in someone else. Some children already do that. They misbehave to get attention. The playing of negative roles becomes particularly pronounced whenever the ego is magnified by an active pain body, that is to say, emotional pain from the past that wants to renew itself through experiencing more pain. Some egos perpetrate crimes in their search for fame. They seek attention through notoriety and other people's condemnation. Please tell me that I exist, that I'm not insignificant, they seem to say. These pathological forms of ego are only more extreme versions of normal egos. Now, a very common role is the one of victim, and the form of attention it seeks is sympathy, or pity, or others' interest in my problems, me and my story. Seeing oneself as a victim is an element in many egoic patterns, such as complaining, being offended, outraged, and so on. Of course, once I am identified with the story in which I assign myself the role of victim, I don't want it to end. And so, as every therapist knows, the ego does not want an end to its problems because they are part of its identity. If no one will listen to my sad story, I can tell it to myself in my head over and over and feel sorry for myself, and so have an identity as someone who is being treated unfairly by life or other people, by fate or God. It gives definition to my self-ego. It makes me into someone. Then that is all that matters to the ego. In the early stages of many so-called romantic relationships, role-playing is quite common in order to attract and keep whoever is perceived by the ego as the one who is going to make me happy, the one who is going to make me feel special and fulfill all my needs. I'll play who you want me to be, and you'll play who I want you to be. That's the unspoken and unconscious agreement. However, role-playing is hard work, and so those roles cannot be sustained indefinitely, especially once you start living together. And when those roles slip, what do you see? Unfortunately, in most cases, not yet the true essence of that being, but that which covers up the true essence, the raw ego, divested of its roles, with its pain body and its thwarted wanting, which now turns into anger, most likely directed at the spouse or partner, lack that is an intrinsic part of the ego sense of self. What is commonly called falling in love is in most cases an intensification of egoic wanting and needing. You become addicted to another person, or rather to your image of that person. Well, it has nothing to do with true love, which contains no wanting whatsoever. The Spanish language is the most honest in regard to conventional notions of love. Te quiero means I want you, as well as I love you. The other expression for I love you is te amo, which then does not have this ambiguity and is rarely used, perhaps because true love is just as rare. As tribal cultures developed into the ancient civilizations, certain functions began to be allotted to certain people. The ruler, the priest or priestess, the warrior, the farmer, the merchant, the craftsman, the laborer, and so on. And therefore a class system developed. Your function, which in most cases you were born into, determined your identity, determined who you were in the eyes of others, as well as in your own eyes. Your function became a role, but it wasn't organized as a role. It wasn't recognized as a role. It was who you were, or who you thought you were. Only rare beings, such as the Buddha or Jesus, saw the ultimate irrelevance of caste or social class and recognized it as identification with form, and saw that such identification with the conditioned and temporal obscured the light of the unconditioned and eternal that does shine in each human being. Now, in our contemporary world, social structures are less rigid, less clearly defined than they used to be. Although most people are, of course, still conditioned by their environment, no longer automatically assigned a function and with it an identity. In fact, in the modern world, more and more people are confused as to where they fit in, what their purpose is, and even who they are. I usually congratulate people when they tell me, "I don't know who I am anymore." Then they look perplexed and ask, "Are you saying it's a good thing to be confused?" I asked them to investigate. What does it mean to be confused? I don't know is not confusion. Confusion is, I don't know, but I should know. Or I don't know, but I need to know. Is it possible to let go of the belief that you should or need to know who you are? In other words, can you cease looking to conceptual definitions to give you a sense of self? Can you cease looking to thought for an identity? When you let go of the belief that you should or need to know who you are, what happens to confusion? Suddenly it's gone. When you fully accept that you don't know, you actually enter a state of peace and clarity that is closer to who you truly are than thought could ever be. Defining yourself through thought is limiting yourself. We're going to pause at this moment. It's enough to digest for today. Thank you for listening, and may identity with the present moment be yours this day. Bye for now. Rylanka signing off.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.